So what I'm going to try to do is share with you a little bit of taking some of the theory and the underlying principles that Christine just talked about and show some of the applications in a region where it's traditionally been very productive, but where these practices haven't had a lot of use here. So let's see, do I go to the down arrow? Yeah, here we go. So in essence, what I want to try to do is share with you a little bit of the productive reality of California's Central Valley. And by doing this, I'm going to talk primarily about annual cropping systems. And the falling behind there indicates a little bit that we're really not where many regions around the world are or around the country these days with the flurry of activity and experience base that's being developed with the use of cover crops. But we're trying to, as I said, try to apply the principles there. Give you some information from a very long-term cover crop evaluation study. Talk about some of the trade-offs that are involved with inserting cover crops into annual crop systems under water-short conditions. And then share with you really some exciting scaling up of the innovation and the adoption of these systems by farmers in California's Central Valley. So in a nutshell, that's where I'd like to go. Many of you perhaps have heard of the legendary researcher out of South Dakota State University, Duane Beck, who I dare say has been a mentor for me personally in my own professional work, but who outlines these kinds of principles here quite freely and readily, and the success that they've had, the farmers in South Dakota, working with these principles and try to, since the early 1990s, design systems that will take advantage of them and allow them to stay in business and farm productively, it's caught our attention. And a lot of these principles are very important. The USDA, NRCS, probably as all or most of, not all of us recognize, with their current soil health initiative program that's underway around the country, acknowledge some of those same principles, maybe different wording here, but as Christine talked about, adding diversity to the systems, year-round cover to the extent that it's possible, and reducing the tillage component, they've caught our attention in California. And these are sort of the underlying set of principles that we tried to pursue in the research that I'm going to share with you this morning. A couple years ago, we had a meeting of about, 35 farmers in the Central Valley of California, and they came up with themselves pretty much, in essence, the same kinds of soil improvement practices that they identified that reflect the NRCS four principles and the things that Duane Beck has taught us over the years. Feeding the system, reducing disturbance, adding diversity to the system. Again, dare I say, these are universal goals that people have and that we have tried to include there. However, the reality is in much of the annual cropping systems in the Central Valley, where I came from, about 250 miles north of here, is that they are there's very high intensive production, but there are very few aspects of those soil improving practice lists that are being implemented. All right, that's in general the kind of intercrop tillage that goes on to prepare seed beds for the high value crops that need to be seeded into those beds to be successful in farming the systems there. So that's sort of the current situation there. I borrowed the ideas for this slide from a soil microbiologist up in Canada, Odette Maynard, and what we're both trying to show here is the complexity of the different factors that people have to deal with in farming successfully. And what we have tried to key in on in the work that I'm going to share with you this morning are the soil, water management, obviously, in California. Explore the opportunities for taking advantage of residues in systems that would be far different from that clean cultivation slide that I just showed you. And then emphasize, to a greater extent anyway, the diversity of soil biology in these systems here. So that's, again, the starting place for where we've been. And the tools that we bring to these systems that we tried to develop and evaluate start over here with precision irrigation, which is an absolute necessity in California because of the water shortages. And that involves usually farmers using subsurface buried drip, or in our own research, we've tried to explore and catch up a bit with some of the other regions in the country, overhead precision mechanized irrigation. We couple precision irrigation with controlled traffic to the greatest extent possible, focus on those four goals of the overall system. And really, this is a new area for us, and we're just beginning to generate information on some of the soil biology and use, if not no-till, at least strip-till as a tool to bring all of that together in the systems development and evaluation. Another thing, coming back to Duane Beck, that caught our attention is his perennial challenge to take the E out of ET. Can you reduce soil water evaporation by having residues and by reducing disturbance? And this is something that we've actually seen in our own research here, that you can, by just reducing tillage between between crops of winter wheat and corn, you save about an inch of water. In our experience, by having mulches over the soil surface projected over a normal summer evapotranspiration period, you can save perhaps another 3 inches of water. So 4 inches out of an estimated summer period ET demand of 30 inches is about 13 or 14%. Not huge, but nothing trivial either in that regard. I want to share with you now a long-term experiment that was actually begun in 1999 in Fresno County of the San Joaquin Valley, in which and it's still going on, we've been comparing four systems here. Standard tillage system, which the conventional intercrop tillage, breaking down beds, reforming beds between crops, with and without cover crops, and then early on, our best effort at reducing tillage in these systems. It was a cotton tomato rotation for about 14 years, and now we've tried to diversify the rotation recently as well. But cotton tomatoes for those 4 years, again, with reduced tillage here, sometimes no-till cotton, almost no-till tomato transplanting in this system with and without cover crops. So those are the four systems we've been evaluated, and it looks quite different. All right. These are not the clean cultivation fields that I showed earlier. There's tomato residue after a machine harvest over here, cotton residue after we're not quite in compliance with the pink bollworm, a pest of San Joaquin Valley cotton, but we've shredded the cotton, root pulled the roots to dislodge the plants from the soil so they're not going to live over the winter period and create pest problems for the next crop, and then we add cover crops to the other systems there. And you can't see there, but a clean cultivation plot would be the comparison there. We started off with very simple cover crops here for many of the first few years, and it was a simple mixture of triticale, rye, and pea, which was the main cover crop. And then later on, hearing about what's going on around the country with diverse multi-species cover crops, we tried to take advantage of that diversity by adding different cover crops into this. Some years we get very good biomass in the cover crops here. Again, these are largely rain-fed cover crops. The first year we applied about 4 inches of water, and then in 2 years here we applied another 4 inches. So just a total of 4 inches or 8 inches of water over these 15 years, and you can see different amounts with different cover crops there. I happen to notice that during the course of the study that there's been a weight gain actually in the study. Again, this is the high residue situation that we're involved with here. Again, this is not, I don't want to give you the impression that there's much of this kind of work going on currently in California, but it's deliberately trying to impose and pursue those principles that we talked about early on. No-till drilling in the cover crops into some fairly high residue in that particular year, and seeing now the systems develop, as Christine was talking about, with some of this diversity and the principle of year-round soil cover there. So this is probably taken in the early part of December on that particular year there with the residue still in place. All of this hasn't been easy by any stretch. Imagine transplanting tomatoes into that kind of residue. You can see the cotton stalks that are in there. Again, a somewhat scaled up transplanter there, but getting the tomato transplants into that kind of residue is certainly a challenge there. Probably as many of you in the room this morning, trying to share information about the systems that are now involving cover crops, what kind of mower or shredder to use. We've experimented with lots of these different things and tried to share these kind of experiences with folks. Again, trying to diversify the cover crop mixtures. One of the things I'm almost embarrassed to admit here, but that the mixtures we've been trying to use, we haven't pursued the seeding rates very carefully there. And so some of you who are just starting on this, we've tended to seed the cover crops at very high rates, sometimes over 100 pounds per acre. And more recently, we've learned, you know, from the commercial folks back in the Midwest that lower seeding rates, 50 or 60 pounds, are probably better idea in terms of getting that diversity to flourish within a mixture and not having some of those mustards swamp out the other seeds in the mixture. The rainfall pattern in California is a Mediterranean climate, as perhaps you know here. Very little rain in the middle of the year. The average rainfall in the Central Valley where we are conducting this work is about 7 inches per year there. So very limited rainfall, 180 millimeters per year here. It comes generally at the beginning of November and stays till about the middle part of March. Now, this shows the biomass we've gotten from the cover crops, and largely those rye, triticale, and pea cover crops beginning in the year 2000 where we irrigated. So we got about 4 tons of dry matter in that year. Some of these other years over here, we added a couple of inches per year of supplemental irrigation. The rest of everything in the middle here has been all without any irrigation. So whenever the rains come in November or December, and however long they last and whatever comes, we take advantage of that, but we're not deliberately adding supplemental irrigation. And you can see tremendous diversity here. From this year, 2007, where we got about 39 kilograms per hectare, to this first year when we're over, you know, 9,000 there. So the timing of the rainfall, the onset of rainfall, and the amount of rainfall in this kind of environment is very, very important. Overall, though, with just 8 inches of supplemental irrigation, we've achieved about 20 tons of organic matter and about 7.5 tons of carbon out of that cover cropping effort there. I won't share with you some of the more rigorous soil quality evaluations here, but just this morning, take advantage of some of the work we did with the NRCS soil quality test kit and following up on what Ted Zobeck has done down in Texas here, trying to look at these kinds of well-established systems and see how they vary in different aspects of soil quality that are examined by the test kit. We've done a lot of this work, just as more show-and-tell stuff for different field days largely, but you know, we took a good sample size here to come up with the following data. Didn't see any chemical differences really whatsoever in the pH or the EC, and that mirrors our long-term laboratory analysis as well there. We haven't seen any changes in those properties there. If you look at the stability assessments here, these are pretty much visual scores that indicate higher degree of stability of the aggregates over a dipping, dunking kind of a cycle here. And you can see there, if we compare the standard till without a cover crop, standard till with cover crop, conservation tillage without a cover crop and with a cover crop, that we are starting to see some trends in terms of, as Christine showed, the water-stable aggregates here, the slaking score, the higher score indicates more resistance to slaking, and also the single ring infiltrometer data there. So, and this is reflected in some of our other soil property measurements here. Also, soil nitrogen, at least in the top 15 centimeters, has been increased by the cover crop systems here. Now, the big issue, however, and you can anticipate where I'm going to go right now, is will anybody be able to do this under the severe water shortage conditions of California right now? And rightfully the question comes in, how can you justify adding cover crops under these conditions? This is on our local Fresno Bee Sunday newspaper back in January of this year. This is the outline of California, the state. You can see the state border here. This is a year ago, the snowpack that provides the water for the irrigation districts throughout much of the Central Valley. A year ago, back in 2013, and then again in the current year. So you know, you've all heard in the news media the dramatic and drastic impacts the drought is having on California. There's a section tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock or 4 o'clock where we'll talk about some of these impacts and what folks are doing now. But it's I'll share with you. I interviewed for the event this week here 10 different farmers that are part of our work group, and asked them four basic questions just to give you some experience about what the drought has meant to them. The first question was the availability of water. How have your irrigation allocations been reduced this year? And except for the two folks that are on the east side of the valley, all of them said that they've had 100% reductions in the availability of irrigation water available in the irrigation districts. 25 to 30% land has been fallowed. Just a small subsample, but it's probably not too far off from the what's going on out there. Then how did you irrigate this year? Everything has been pumped. It's all from groundwater that has been pumped. And did you for the crops that you grew this year, did you deficit irrigate those? And they all indicated that they were doing that to some extent as well. So very significant impacts of the drought right now, making the trade-off or the balances between inserting cover crops into a system even more critical and important for us to develop information and learn about. We've tried to do that. We have a couple years' worth of data that I'll share with you now related to assessing the amount of soil water depletion that occurs under fallow winter conditions and under cover crop conditions. And we, for this study, we've had, again, tried to diversify a legume grass mixture, and then a brassica mixture here, with different seeding rates for each of those there. And we've monitored, again, this is largely just irrigation of about 2 inches to establish the cover crop in November, and then monitoring biomass throughout each of the seasons for each of the mixtures there. We also have looked at, this is in a no-till field there, so there has been some residue there into which the cover crops had seeded. And I think this is nothing earth-shattering or surprising here, but the temperatures under the residue and also under the cover crop are lower there, all right? Consistently lower throughout much of that winter period there. The changes in soil water soil volumetric water content are shown here. And maybe it's just important to look at the overall trends. This line here, with lots of data sampling by neutron probe here, indicates the fallow, the bare field, soil water content down to about 1 meter. And yes, when we go through the winter period, there's a drying that's due to the cover crops right over here compared to the bare fallow treatment, and again in the second year of the study here. But when you look at the amount of water that's in the soil at the beginning of the cover crop period in November, compare it to what's there in the springtime, the amount of depletion is shown here for the two different years here, whereas in the fallow plots with the right over here, there's been a net increase in soil water storage in both years here. The amount of depletion in that top meter of water, of soil, has been fairly modest here. So it's been less than 5 centimeters of water here in both of the years here. So what we've shown here, I think that in this work here, that there has been a total of 25 tons per hectare of above-ground biomass produced in this 15-year period. The great variations in the amount of biomass that goes on in an individual year there, from very small to quite large if you add supplemental irrigation, the amount of water that's depleted in the soil in that top 3 feet of soil is about 5.3 centimeters and less than 1 centimeter in the other year compared to the fallow. And the adoption here, I'll share with you some last farm adoption pictures here, is increasing in some of these practices here. One of the things we've seen in the data here is that in California, in order for this to succeed, you have to get some water in the December period, after the seeding period. And if that comes in early December, that's probably your best key here. Some of you have seen these kind of legendary farmer practitioners of cover cropping around the country, and this is a nice kind of a summary that captures a lot of the information about what they're doing with their systems, some of the benefits they've seen, how they're improving soil here. I was given permission to use this by a retired NRCS person here, but it's really striking. And some of the benefits that Christine mentioned here, these farmers in various places and environments around the country are now seeing these kind of benefits as well. We now I'm actually quite pleased to say, within California, we now have a complementary list of some of the farmers who are leading the way in these kinds of systems that reduce tillage and also add more diversity into the systems there. And what does that look like? Well, everything from, imagine a processing tomato farm here, large-scale equipment, five-row, five-foot-wide bed equipment here, inserting off-season cover crops, granted not a lot of biomass there, managing the biomass so they can effectively transplant tomatoes into that. This is a fresh market tomato farmer here who is experimenting with the same kinds of practices. They don't have to mechanically harvest here. They can go in and pick the fruit up, and they don't have to worry about the residue there. Most of those farmers there, the tomato folks, are keying in on the fact that you can't let the cover crop get too big. They're usually setting about 12 to 18 inches there before they terminate it. The other thing that we're just starting to look at now are much more diverse multi-species cover crops that we've gotten some help with from the Midwest. And just a couple weeks ago, actually, again, large-scale seeding of these cover crops. This happens to be probably the largest tomato grower in the whole state here, looking at these kinds of options there for improving the soil there. So with that, Tim, I'm not sure if there's any time there or any questions.
Several
okay.
Minutes.
Thanks.